Hello, everyone. This is Ted Hughes's book, The Iron Man. Chapter 1, The Coming of the Iron Man. The Iron Man came to the top of the cliff. How far had he walked? Nobody knows. Where had he come from? Nobody knows. How was he made? Nobody knows. Taller than a house, the Iron Man stood at the top of the cliff, on the very brink, in the darkness. The wind sang through his iron fingers, and his great iron head, shaped like a dustbin but as big as a bedroom, slowly turned to the right and slowly turned to the left. His iron ears turned this way and that way. He was hearing the sea. His eyes, like headlamps, glowed white, then red, then infrared, searching the sea. Never before had the Iron Man seen the sea. He swayed in the strong wind that pressed against his back, and he swayed forward on the brink of the high cliff. His enormous right foot, lifted up out into space, and the Iron Man stepped forward off the cliff into nothingness. Crash! Down the cliff, the Iron Man came toppling, head over heels. Crash! 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 From rock to rock, snag to snag, tumbling slowly, as he crashed and crashed and crashed, his iron legs fell off, his iron arms broke off, and the hands broke off the arms. His great iron ears fell off, and his eyes fell out. His great iron head fell off, and all the separate pieces tumbled and scattered, crashing and bumping and clanging, down onto the rocky beach far below. A few rocks tumbled with him, and then silence. Only the sound of the sea, chewing away at the edge of the rocks, where the bits and pieces of the Iron Man lay scattered far and wide, silent and unmoving. Only one of the iron hands, lying beside an old sand-logged, washed-up seaman's boat, waved its fingers for a minute, like a crab on its back, and then it lay still. While the stars went on wheeling through the sky, and the wind went on tugging at the grass on the clifftop, the sea went on boiling and booming, nobody knew that the Iron Man had fallen, and night passed. Just before dawn, as the darkness grew blue, and the shapes of the rocks separated from each other and two seagulls flew crying over the rocks, they landed on a patch of sand. They had two chicks in a nest on the cliff, and now they were searching for food. One of the seagulls flew up.
Ark!
He had seen something. He glided low over the sharp rocks. He landed and picked something up, something shiny, round and hard. It was one of the Iron Man's eyes. He brought it back to his mate. They both looked at this strange thing, and the eye looked at them. It rolled from side to side, looking first at one gull, then at the other. The gulls, peering at it, thought it was a strange kind of clam, peeping at it from its shell. Then the other gull flew up, wheeled around, and landed and picked something up too. Some awkward heavy thing. The gull flew low, and slowly dragging the heavy thing, finally the gull dropped it beside the eye. This new thing had five legs, and it moved. The gull thought it was a strange kind of crab, and they thought they had found a strange crab and a strange clam. They did not know that they had found the Iron Man's eye and the Iron Man's hand. But as soon as the eye and the hand got together, the eye looked at the hand, its light glowed blue. The hand stood up on three fingers and its thumb and craned its forefinger like a long nose. It felt around, touched the eye, and gleefully it picked up the eye, tucked it under its middle finger, and the eye peered out between the forefinger and the thumb, and now the hand could see. Awesome. It looked around and darted and jabbed one of the gulls with its stiffly held finger and darted at the other and jabbed him. The two gulls flew up into the wind with a frightening cry. Slowly, then, the hand crept over the stones, searching. It ran forward suddenly and grabbed something and tugged. But the thing was stuck between two rocks. The thing was one of the Iron Man's arms. At last the hand left the arm and went scuttling hither and thither among the rocks till it stopped, touching something gently. This thing was the other hand. This new hand stood up and hooked its fingers around the little finger of the hand with the eye and let itself be led. Now the two hands, the seeing one and the leading, the blind one, walking on their fingertips, went back together to the arm, and together they tugged it free. The hand with the eye fastened itself to the wrist of the arm, and the arm stood up and walked on its hand. The other hand clung on behind, as before, and this strange trio went searching. An eye, there it was, blinking at them speechlessly beside a black and white pebble. The seeing hand fitted the eye to the blind hand, and now both hands could see. They went running among the rocks, and soon they found a leg. They jumped on top of the leg, and the leg went hopping over the rocks, with the arm swinging from the hand that clung to the top of the leg, and the other hand clung to the top of the hand, and the two hands with the eyes guided the leg, twisting it this way and that as the rider guides a horse. Oh, that's a bit complicated, isn't it? Soon they found another leg and the other arm, and now each hand, with an eye under its palm and an arm dragging from its wrist, rode on a leg separately around the beach, hop, 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 and they went peering among the rocks. One found an ear, at the same moment the other found a giant torso. Then the busy hands fitted the legs to the torso, and then they fitted the arms, and each fitted to the other, and the torso stood up with the legs and the arms, but no head. It walked about the beach, holding its eyes up in its hands, searching for its lost head. At last, there was the head, eyeless, earless, nestled in a heap of seaweed. Now, in no time, the Iron Man had fitted his head back, and his eyes were in place, and everything was in place except for one ear. He strode about the beach, searching for his lost ear, and the sun rose over the sea, and the day came. The two gulls sat on their ledge high on the cliff, and they watched the immense man striding to and fro over the rocks. Between them, on the nesting ledge, lay a great iron ear. The gulls could not hear it, the baby gulls could not eat it, and it lay there on the ledge. Far below, the Iron Man searched. At last he stopped and looked at the sea. Was he thinking the sea had stolen his ear? Perhaps he was thinking the sea had come up while he lay scattered and had gone down again with his ear. He walked towards the sea. He walked into the breakers, and there he stood for a while, the breakers bursting around his knees. And then he walked deeper and deeper and deeper. The gulls took off and glided down low over the great iron head that was now moving slowly out through the swell. The eyes blazed red, level with the wave tops, till a big wave covered them and foam spouted out of the top of his head. The head still moved out of the water, and the eyes and the top of his head appeared for a moment in a hollow of the swell, and now the eyes were green. Then the seas covered them and the head. The gulls circled low over the line of bubbles that went on moving slowly, deeper into the sea. Chapter 2. The Return of the Iron Man. One evening, a farmer's son, a boy called Hogarth, was fishing in the stream that ran down to the sea. It was growing too dark to fish, and his hook kept getting caught in the weeds and bushes, so he stopped fishing and came up from the stream and stood still listening to the owls in the wood further up the valley, to the sea behind him. "Hush," said the sea, and again, "Hush." Suddenly, he felt a strange feeling. He felt he was being watched, and he felt afraid. He turned and looked up the steep field to the top of the high cliff. Behind that skyline was a sheer rocky cliff and the sea, and on that skyline, just above the edge of it, in the dusk, were two green lights. What were two green lights doing at the top of the cliff? Then, as Hogarth watched, a huge dark figure climbed up over the cliff top, and the two green lights rose into the sky. They were the giant figure's eyes, a giant black figure, taller than a house, black and towering in the twilight, and the green headlamp eyes. The Iron Man. There he stood on the clifftop, looking inland. Hogarth began to run. He ran home. 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 The Iron Man had come back. So he got home at last, and gasping for breath, he told his dad. An Iron Man. An Iron Man. A giant. His father frowned, and his mother grew pale. His little sister began to cry. The father took down his double-barreled gun. He believed his son, and he went out. He locked the door, he got in his car and drove to the next farm. But the farmer laughed. He He was a fat red man with a fat red mouth, and when he stopped laughing, his eyes were red too. An Iron Man. Nonsense, he said. So Hoggart's father got back in the car, and now it was dark, and it began to rain. He drove to the next farm. That farmer frowned. He believed. Tomorrow, he said, we must see what it is, this Iron Man. His feet will have fresh tracks in the earth. So Hoggarth's father again got back in his car, but as he turned the car in the yard, he saw a strange thing in the headlamps. Half a tractor tire lay there, just half, chopped clean off. The other half was missing. He got out of his car and the other farmer came to look. The tractor had been bitten off. There were big teeth marks in the steel. No explanation. The two men looked at each other. They were puzzled and afraid. What could have bitten a tractor into? There in the yard, in the rain, in the night, while they had been talking inside the house. The farmer ran in, bolted his door, and Hoggarth's father jumped in his car and drove off into the night and the rain as fast as he could, homeward. The rain poured down and Hoggarth's father drove hard. The headlights lit up the road and bushes, and suddenly two headlamps in a tall treetop at the roadside ahead. Headlamps in a treetop? How? Hoggarth's father slowed and peered up to see what the lights might be. In the treetops, as he slowed, a giant iron foot came down in the middle of the road, a foot as big as a single bed, and the headlamps came down closer. A giant hand reached toward the windshield. The Iron Man. He put on speed and aimed his car at the foot. Crash! He knocked the foot out of the way. He drove on faster and faster, and behind him, on the road, a clanging, clattering and booming went up, as if an iron skyscraper had collapsed. The iron giant, with his foot knocked out from under him, had toppled over. And so Hoggarth's father got home safely. But next morning, all the farmers were shouting with anger. Where were their tractors, their earth diggers, their ploughs, their harrows? From every farm in every region, all the steel and iron farm machinery had gone. Where to? Who had stolen it? There was a clue. Here and there lay half a wheel, half an axe, or half a mudguard, carved with giant tooth marks where it had been bitten off. And how had it been bitten off? How had steel been bitten off? What had happened? There was another clue. From farm to farm, over the soft soil of the fields, were giant footprints, each one the size of a single bed. The farmers, in a frightened, silent, amazed crowd, followed the footprints, and at every farm the footprints visited all the metal machinery had disappeared. Finally, the footprints led back up to the top of the cliff, where the little boy had seen the Iron Man appear the night before, when he was fishing. The footprints led right off the cliff top. All the way down the cliff were torn marks on the rocks where a huge iron body had slid down, and below the tide was in. The grey, empty, moving tide. So the Iron Man had gone back to the sea. So, the furious farmers began to shout. The Iron Man had stolen all the machinery and eaten it. Anyway, he had taken it. It had gone. So what if he came again? What would he take next time? Cows? Houses? People? They would have to do something. They couldn't call the police or the army because nobody would believe them about this iron monster. They would have to do something themselves. So what did they do? At the bottom of the hill below the Iron Man, below where the Iron Man had come over the high cliff, and they dug a deep, enormous hole. The hole wider than a house and as deep as three trees, one on top of the other. It was a colossal hole, a stupendous hole, and the sides of it were sheer as walls. They pushed all the earth off to one side and covered the hole with branches and covered with straw and straw with soil, so that when they finished, the hole looked like a freshly ploughed field. Now on the side of the hole, opposite the slope, up to the top of the cliff, they put an old rusty lorry as bait, and now they reckon the Iron Man would come over the top of the cliff out of the sea, and he'd see the lorry, which is painted red, come down to chawn it, but on his way, he'd be crossing the hole. and the moment he stepped with his great weight on top of that soil, held up by straw and branches, he would crash into the hole and never get out. They'd find him there in the hole and bring him a few bulldozers and earth movers that he hadn't eaten already. They'd push the pile of earth on top of him and bury him forever in the hole. They were certain now that they'd get him. Next morning, in great excitement, all the farmers gathered together to go along to examine their trap. They came carefully close, expecting to see his hands tearing at the edge of the pit. They came closer and closer. The red lorry stood just as they left it, and the soil lay there just as they left it, undisturbed. Everything was just as they left it. The Iron Man had not come. Nor did he come that day, or the next morning. All the farmers came again, and still nothing. Everything lay just as they'd left it. And so it went on, day after day. Still the Iron Man never came. Now the farmers began to wonder if he would ever come. They began to wonder if he had ever come at all. They began to make up explanations of what had happened to their machinery. Nobody likes to believe in an iron monster that eats tractors and cars. Soon the farmer that owned the red lorry they were using as bait decided that he needed it, and he took it away. So there lay a beautiful deep trap without any bait. Grass began to grow on the loose soil, and the farmers talked of filling the hole in. After all, you can't leave a giant pit like that. Somebody might fall in. Some stranger coming along might just walk over and fall in it. But they didn't want to fill it in. It had been such hard work digging it. And besides, they'd all had a sneaking fear that the Iron Man might come again, and that hole was there as a weapon. At least put up a little notice, "Danger, keep off," to warn people away, and then they left. Now the little boy Hogarth had an idea. He thought he could use the hole to trap a fox. He found a dead hen one day and threw it on the loose soil over the trap, and then towards the evening he climbed a tree nearby and waited. A long time he waited, and a star came out. He could hear the sea. Then, there standing on the edge of the hole was a fox, a big red fox looking towards the dead hen. Hogarth stopped breathing. The fox stood without moving, sniff, 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 out towards the hen. But he did not step out onto the trap. Slowly he walked around the wide patch of raw soil till he got back to where he had started, sniffing all the time towards the bird. But he did not step out onto the trap. He was too smart to walk out there, where it was not safe. But at that moment he stopped sniffing. He turned his head and looked towards the top of the cliff. Hogarth, wondering what the fox had seen, looked towards the top of the cliff. There, enormous in the blue evening sky, stood the Iron Man on the brink of the cliff, gazing inland. In a moment the fox had vanished. Now what? Hogarth carefully, quietly, hardly breathing, climbed slowly down the tree. He must get home and tell his father. But at the bottom of the tree, he stopped. He could no longer see the Iron Man against the twilight sky. Had he gone back over the cliff into the sea? Or was he coming down the hill in the darkness, under the high skyline towards the farm? Then he understood what was happening. He could hear a strange tearing and creaking sound. The Iron Man was pulling up the barbed wire fence that led down the hill, and soon he could see him. He came nearer, tearing the wire from the fence post and rolling it up like spaghetti and eating it. The Iron Man was eating the barbed wire fence. But if he went along the fence, eating as he moved, he wouldn't come anywhere near the trap, which was out in the middle of the field. He could spend the whole night wandering about the countryside, eating up the fences, and wouldn't bring him anywhere nearer the trap. But Hogarth had an idea. In his pocket, among other things, he had a long nail file. He took these out. Did he dare? The idea frightened him. In the silent dusk, he taped the nail and the knife blade together. Clink, clink, clink. At the sound of the metal, the Iron Man's hands became still, and after a few seconds he turned his head, and the headlamp eyes shone towards Hogarth. Again, clink, 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 went the nail file on the knife. Slowly, the Iron Man took three strides towards Hogarth and stopped. It was now quite dark, and the headlamps shone red. Hogarth pressed close to the tree trunk. Between him and the Iron Man lay a wide lid, lay the wide lid of the trap. Clink, clink, clink. Again he tapped the nail on the knife. And now the Iron Man was coming. He could feel the earth shaking under the weight of his footsteps. Was it too late to run? Hogger stared at the Iron Man looming, searching towards him for the taste of metal that had made the inviting sound. Clink, clink, clink. Crash! The Iron Man vanished. He was in the pit. The Iron Man had fallen into the pit, and Hogarth went close. The earth was shaking and the Iron Man struggled underground. Hogarth peered over the torn edge of the great pit, and far below, two deep red headlamps glared up at him from the pitch blackness. He could hear the Iron Man's insides grinding, and it sounded like a big lorry grinding its gears on a steep hill. Hogarth set off, and he ran and ran home. Home with great news. As he passed the cottages on the way, as he turned down the lane towards his father's farm, he was shouting, "The Iron Man's in the trap! We've caught the Iron Giant!" When the farmers saw the Iron Man wallowing in their deep pit, they set up a great cheer. He glared up towards them, and his eyes burned from red to purple, and purple to white, from white to fiery whirling black and red, and the cogs inside him ground and screeching, but he could not climb out of the steep-sided pit. Then under the lights of car headlamps, the farmers brought bulldozers of earth pushers and began to push in on top of him, of the struggling Iron Man, all the earth that they had dug up when they first made the pit, and that had been piled on off to one side. The Iron Man roared as the earth began to fall on him, but soon he roared no more. Soon the pit was full of earth, and soon the Iron Man was buried silent, packed down under all the soil, while the farmers piled the earth over him into a mound and into a hill. They went to and fro over the mound with their new tractors, which they'd bought since the Iron Man had ate their old ones, and they packed up the earth down hard. Then they all went home talking cheerfully. They were surely they had seen the last of the Iron Man. Only Hogarth felt suddenly sorry. He felt guilty. It was he, after all, who had lured the Iron Man into the pit.